Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Listen, we're gonna hard launch into the Cavs Thunder here.
Can we?
Mostly because there's just no transition from where we were to where we're going.
I want to see Kobe Altman hand out popcorn, undercover boss style.
No, I don't. He doesn't.
Could
have
Kobe Altman sweep the floors at the end of the game?
He doesn't have the shoulders for it. I will say, last night was what every NBA game should be. Last night was one of the best regular season games any of us have seen in a great while. And I got to tell you, it was, yes, because the Cavs ended up coming out on top, it's even better. But that was so much fun last night. Kudos to both teams, because that was four quarters of, oh my God, I don't know if I'm going to be able to live to the next second. It was flawless, and for the Cavs to get that win is an extra 5% impressive for me.
30 lead changes?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to put it up with other regular season basketball games all time. I know I saw a lot of people last night being like, that was as good as the Christmas Day game in 2016. Everyone's got your own personal favorite for whatever reasons. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that was my favorite one I've ever seen. But as far as basketball gets, Nick, I mean, just from a competitive standpoint, it was fun to watch the Cavs. I know we're so excited that they win these games consistently now, but every game in the previous 10 have been double digits. I liked seeing them in a fight, but I also liked seeing what they did when they got punched in the face and then had to respond. I like seeing those little things, because we haven't seen enough of that with this Cavs team.
I like to see them when they get punched in the face by a really good team and how they respond.
Yeah, because there were stretches where I thought Oklahoma City was just going to start to move away.
Yep, and like when the Hornets punched them in the face and they stagger, we know I don't like that at all, not even a little bit. But to what you said, I do think both teams handled getting punched in the face really, really well. And here's the one thing. Last night proved a thought that I had on the physicality of basketball, because I think when we say, the Cavs are getting pushed around, I want them to be the team pushing everybody around. That might just not be what their strength is, right? Sometimes force doesn't meet force. What I thought they did that was so brilliant was pointing out that the force that OKC was playing with, including the play where Hartenstein and Jared Allen got tangled up, and Jared went to rush and jump for the ball before it went out of bounds.
Yeah.
And Hartenstein had hooked him, and Jared just made it plain as day. That's like, you can beat physical basketball by playing smart and by just not getting in your feelings about it. And I thought the Cavs did a fantastic job of that all night, of just not getting too frustrated with that physicality, which is something they really have struggled with the two previous seasons. When you get physical, you could see them just tighten up, and all of a sudden they don't like it. I thought they played really, really smart basketball any time the Thunder got physical last night, and I think that's how you saw Hartenstein, SGA, and really the Thunder in general get into foul trouble, which altered the way they wanted to play.
Well, the foul trouble was the big thing, especially with Hartenstein. But more importantly, Nick, is that they took what was in front of them. Like we probably should have laid out the game plan a lot better than maybe what we did yesterday with what the idea of how to beat the Thunder should have obviously been from Jump Street. With no Chet Holmgren out there, and then once Hartenstein got in foul trouble, it just became as obvious as the day is long. You needed to find a way to just make the Jared Allen and Evan Mobley show. Like, and I don't know. I don't know if this is, when they meet up 8 days from now, if Holmgren's healthy, I don't know that they can just fall back on that the same way. I don't know that that's going to be the recipe, but in that game last night, it seemed pretty obvious, and tip of the cap to the Cavs for being able to not only take advantage of it, but being able to exploit it. I mean, that was as good of a Jared Allen, Evan Mobley comboed game than you'll ever see.
So last night's the best case scenario for the NBA, because if the game looked like that, if every game looked like that for even 70 out of the 82 games that every team plays, if per season, the NBA ratings would be through the roof in the regular season. It really would be. And teams would be more prepared to get to the playoffs and make a dent.
Right.
That would probably help the parity. But for the Cavs standpoint, last night was also the best case scenario, because what you mentioned with Holmgren, I just think it's really interesting, because like, as if that's a defense of the Thunder losing the game, it doesn't need to be defended. The Thunder played tremendously well. The Cavs just played a little bit better. But it's so funny that
well,
Thunder
each
fans...
Each team left with their own little excuse, right?
Yes.
We left with, even in a win, we said, well, Donovan didn't play his best basketball, and that's why that was even 10 times greater the win. And then with Thunder fans...
Well, that's the equalizer, though. So when they meet 7 days from now, all right, Chet, if he's back, that changes the formula for you. Yeah, but what if Donovan goes off next
yeah,
time?
Yeah, I don't. My response to that one was the idea that SGA probably isn't going to only score 31 on 27 shots. Like, SGA had to take a lot of shots. And SGA, as bad as Donovan was at the half, I think SGA had 5 points when Donovan had three. I mean, SGA was just as bad for a large portion of that game than Donovan was.
Also, he earned a fan last night. I've always liked the fact that what he's done, and the fact that he was, what, the 12th pick, and he's turned himself into an MVP favorite this year. So I love his game.
Yeah.
But last night, every time anybody fouled, there was the, oh, what are we doing? And SGA committed a foul in the third quarter. And
well, yeah, I mean, he got in foul trouble. You don't worry about these things.
But what happened is he didn't immediately throw out his hands, and then he watched the Jumbotron. They show this on TV. And then he kind of went like, ah, hell, I fouled him. And I was like, new favorite non-Cav right there.
Just by admitting it?
Yeah, he admitted it. He was like, yeah, I did foul him. Okay, I guess that's a foul.
Yeah, and notice once he had four, I did watch him. They did that. They did that one play with Isaiah Joe. Where Isaiah Joe got charged with a foul, mm-hmm. and it was. I thought he was gone, and then all of a sudden, and you're Doris lost her mind. She's like, "No, Joe fouled him twice." It's like, all right, what are we doing here?
So I will say, last night's the best case scenario for the Cavs. If you can win that game without peak Donovan, right? I think that's a really good sign for you, because in the playoffs, there's going to be times where Donovan, because of the way you're built, and because, you know, he's a human, he's not just going to drop 30 points a game. And for Evan specifically, to have stretches where he, you know, took over the thing, or for even Jared. I mean, Jared had so many, like...
Jared was great. 25, 12, and 6.
So many, as Richard Jefferson called it, lobs from Evan when Evan airballed mm-hmm. two shots and he just put it up. But even like the interplay between them with passing, I thought was a game changer last night. That's as good as it gets if Donovan's going to go out there and go 3 of 16 from the field in 35 minutes and score 11 points. To beat that team, I'll take that any time in the playoffs if you're getting the win.
I know. I just wonder if Oklahoma City set up perfectly for the Cavs for that type of game and that type of moment. Without Holmgren, and how obvious it was between Mobley and Allen. Like, because listen, you can't... Mobley and Allen can't do that game against Boston. You can't do it. Between the size that Boston has and everything that they have, it was a different setup. And listen, the Cavs took advantage of it. It was a great win. I don't know how much you can replicate what that was. Not that that matters. It was a great win, but I don't know that you can replicate that.
I think the result matters maybe more than... Because the formula changes on every given game. The identity stays the same, but, you know, at some point... In the fourth quarter, you just do what you got to do to win.
Yeah, but even little things like that. In the fourth quarter, Atkinson moves to zone, and it worked out, and it was great. In a seven-game playoff series, that doesn't work every game.
It doesn't work
they would make adjustments easily.
But see, this is the Kenny Atkinson impact that I love so much is he's trying things now to save them away and store them away for later, whether it's lineups, whether it's defensive concepts, going to the zone, which, by the way, I think Daigneault did a couple times yesterday as well to try and catch the Cavs off guard. So both coaches went there. So whether it's tactics, whether it's, you know, inbounds plays, like if we are to believe what is, I think, the essential truth of the NBA, which this is all just a feeder system to figuring it out, in figuring your team out for the playoffs, then Kenny Atkinson, in a game with that felt like a playoff game, with consequences, right? With without your best player going off, Kenny Atkinson continued to get creative and go, hey, for this five-minute stretch, I'm going to go to this. Or, hey, for this play, we're going to go to this defensive look.
Right.
That is, I mean, that is, I'll be honest with you, last year it felt like at times, we're going to line up, we're going to play our game, and we're going to try and beat you our way, which was defense and whatever the hell you call that offense. On both offensive and defensive sides, you get creativity from Kenny Atkinson in a lot of facets of the game. And I think that's, like, again, that's another tangible takeaway from last night. In a playoff game, look at how he coached that game, because I don't know you win that game with another coach.
Now, the coaching was incredible, but that's part of what I'm getting at here is the idea that if they're going to do this, they have to do something different. And what's different about this Cavs team is the idea that how many other players outside of even the core four were involved in last night's game and how important someone like Strus was. You know the top-rated starting five in last night's game, Nick? It was Mobley, Niang, Strus, Okoro, and Mitchell. That's only two of the core four. Now, he loves that Mobley-Mitchell dynamic, and anytime he can put those two on the court in particular, seems like it doesn't matter who else is around him, they're going to score. That was your highest net rating lineup last night. Niang, Strus, Okoro being the other three involved there. Like, and that's what Atkinson can do. But in the playoffs, is he going to move to that 10-man lineup, which is not something you typically see? I think he will, and that's going to be the roll of the dice. And it might be what ultimately shakes up the NBA in a large-scale way, but this is something different.
But I think that, again, and this is something I always love that Ty Lue did. On any given year, their lineup of death was different. Those mid, you know, the really from Ty Lue taking over in that first season and on when LeBron was back. But Ty Lue found it. He found something that was his ace in the hole, that when we need a punch, here it goes. And that won individual playoff games. It doesn't win series. Your stars win the series. But individual playoff games and one playoff game can tilt a close series. So, again, I look at that, and you're right. Like, well, you can't do that for seven straight games. You only really need it once or twice in a seven-game series.
No, but it's not that. It's the idea that that was a total team win. And in the playoffs, I'm curious to find out if he can do the 10-man rotation in the playoffs, where typically in the NBA, because you have the days off in between each game, everyone can get rested. Everyone just brings their top eight to the equation and says, get after it. But this team isn't built to just be a top eight. You see the dynamics. I mean, you needed Strus last night. You needed someone different to step up the way that they have been.
216-474-0092 was last night the best-case scenario. Not necessarily winning, but winning without peak Donovan. We got quick hits. And a big Ohio State question, which maybe turns into a Donnybrook. That's coming up at 2:40. Bill Ryder answers what last night's game between the Cavs and Thunder means for him with his thoughts on the Cavs. Pete Futek at 4 will get his thoughts on Ohio State, their must-do to beat Texas. And then at 6:20, we got Gary Barnett, former Colorado head coach, current color analyst for the Buffaloes. We're going to dig a little deeper into Shedeur Sanders as well, but it was last night. The best case scenario with winning without Pete Donovan, 216-474-0092, and maybe Kenny Atkinson's biggest takeaway from the Thunder win next on 92.3 The Fan. I mean, he pretty much agrees. Hey, yeah, we won it without Donovan. That's a great win. That first line, though, where he says the locker room tells him, you know, we don't win that game last year. That's not a J.B. Bickerstaff shot. I think it's an acknowledgement of where the Cavs are.
Yeah, is that more towards Atkinson, or is that about the growth? And I would lean towards that being more towards Atkinson.
Yeah, I think so. Because, again, like, it's so funny how much we just devalue coaching in the NBA, and I get it. Superstars and the power that superstars have has ruined how we think of the player-coach dynamic. And, by the way, a fair amount of it's true. But in situations like in Cleveland, where the right coach steps into the right locker room, and I don't want to get too hyperbolic here because I'm not talking about the end result, but the initial result is not dissimilar from when Steve Kerr stepped into the right team in 2014, and all of a sudden you go see where they were able to take that. I don't know if the Cavs can take it to where the Warriors did in all-time dynasty. But yeah, I mean, I really do think like...
Is it scary, the amount of people that have made that that connection right there and trying to call this an early Warriors team? And I mean, my goodness, the amount of people I heard earlier today assigning different names towards different Cavs players from that 2014...
Who was Clay?
No. We didn't do it. It was the Draymond Green comp that kept being floated around. Mac, you know what I'm talking about there?
For Evan Mobley?
I'm sure you heard that. Yeah.
Oh.
It's getting interesting. And
Draymond Green wishes, by the way.
No one is saying NBA Finals or anything like that in the amount of titles that the Warriors won. They're very vocally being like the early portion of the Warriors. But what part of the early portion Warriors will this Cavs team then develop into the later part of the Warriors?
I just think 32-4, and last night specifically, proves that I don't think you're here without Kenny Atkinson. And so this point, and by the way, I think you would have been able to accomplish similar things with James Borrego, because Borrego and Atkinson were very similar coaches in terms of strength and weaknesses. But I'm trying to think of a coach that maybe we talked about that I think maybe would have gone the wrong way. But basically a similar coach to J.B. Bickerstaff. Great culture guy, but maybe not the best in-game X's and O manager, and maybe not the best communicator in the world either. I said this earlier.
Yeah.
The Cavs did not lean into physicality last night as much as they leaned into being smart about how to exploit. They turned the Thunder's strength into a weakness. They allowed them to get overly physical, and when they did, they usually found a way to draw a foul on offense or defense. That's really smart. Like, Jared Allen can call it ethical basketball. Last night was really smart basketball, and you're doing that against a team that is not dumb. OKC is really, really smart.
Or just the idea that you're able to score almost 130 points against the number one defense in the NBA. Like, we always talk about how a great offense is going to beat a great defense. But you're not supposed to be able to just make a great defense like that. The way the Thunder are, they are the fourth best defense since the turn of the century. Like this is, they're in rarefied air defensively. You're not supposed to be able to turn them into traffic cones, Nick.
So I do think, like, I think like it's we're asking the question: how real is this compared to the playoff disaster? Sorry, that's the wrong question. I'm looking at the wrong thing.
That's okay.
That is this an acknowledgement of Atkinson or is it growth? Where the Cavs locker room's telling Kenny Atkinson, we don't win this game last year. Of course it's both, but I don't think the growth happens without Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, I think they needed somebody that was as nerdy as they are about the sport.
Yeah.
You know, and when you watch Atkinson and even in the post game where he's turning around and talking about how it didn't matter if you won or lost the game was just such a fun basketball game. He just enjoyed being on the sidelines. But the little nitty-gritty basketball things that you can discuss, and I think this Cavs team was built for someone like that. Now, do you owe Lou Dort an apology?
No.
You ripped him yesterday. You made a mockery out of Lou Dort.
He's still a very good basketball player.
He was on Donovan for 75% of those matchups.
Very good basketball player.
Okay.
But not a superstar. I feel comfortable
saying he's a superstar.
And my Lou Dort is not a superstar.
You lean more towards calling him a trash can than you did superstar.
I just said if that's all you're going to get out of the 75 picks you have is 75 more Lou Dortses, you got enough Lou Dortses.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? I get it. What's better than one Lou Dorts? Five Lou Dorts is, you only got 15 roster spots. Somebody's got to be Jalen Williams. Somebody's got to be Chet Holmgren. That's also a ridiculous name for a grown man.
Why do we say it like that?
Because in the NBA, having a grown man named Chet is football. I get it. Baseball. Yep. Be a good second baseman. Maybe a good first baseman. Who knows? Chet in the NBA. I think that does not fit. He already looks like an alien. He already looks like Slender Man.
Well, that's what happens when you're that tall.
Yeah, well, no, and that tall and that skinny.
That tall and that skinny. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Wemby's nicknamed the alien for a reason.
Yeah, that mustache is already on like three watch lists. 216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, at J. Peterlin, is this an acknowledgement of Kenny Atkinson, is it about growth?
They spent all day yesterday, whether that was Darius before the game or after the game, talking about the four All-Stars, and I kind of thought that was a nice acknowledgement that, again, not taking a shot at J.B. Bickerstaff, I thought that was a nice acknowledgement that we wouldn't be here if not for Atkinson.
I think that's a really good point, by the way. Not every compliment of Kenny Atkinson, even when compared directly to last year, is a knock on J.B. Bickerstaff.
No, they're just different.
Yes.
That's it. And that's why Kopi and company made the move. He's different.
Anybody else enjoy the complete flip-flopping?
J.B., by the way, he's doing a good job in Detroit.
Anybody else, by the way, enjoying the complete flip-flopping of what
the national media
has done?
Yeah, don't get me started on that.
So going into the game, all I heard from a fair amount of national media members were, it's one game, it's a regular season, I'm not going to do this. And albeit it was a phenomenal regular season game and what we all wish every regular season game was, and if it was, the NBA wouldn't have to try and find creative solutions to getting their players to play harder and getting fans more invested. But, oh, man, from Tim Bontemps.
Well, he's the one. He's the one I just want to zero in on for a second.
I just don't know why that guy hates the Cavs. It never made sense to me. I mean, you're a Wizards reporter.
It was titled, "The Challenges Are Coming for the NBA Best Cavs." And we read all sorts of different... It was a 3,000-word hit piece on the Cavs. And then today, people are like, oh, thanks to Tim for acknowledging how great the Cavs are. Because after the game, he was like, oh, yeah, they're a great team and they could do great things. Where were you 24 hours ago, Tim?
In fairness, Brian Windhorst also had to come out and give the mea culpa on First Take, saying, I was wrong about the Cavs.
But Brian did it from the perspective that I think every Cavs fan listening can do it from. Brian did it from the perspective of, because we all picked a side, right? Did you want to break up the duo in the backcourt or the duo in the frontcourt? We all picked a side. And Windhorst was emphatically about breaking up Allen and Mobley, and that's fine. He picked his side. Every Cavs fan did that. We also didn't spend 24 hours ago talking about how we needed to break up the core four. We didn't do that. Nobody did that.
So we will continue on the conversation about OKC and Cleveland, the great game last night, what it means for the Cavs, state of the Cavs, all that and more with Bill Ryder, host of Ryder Than You on the Infinity Sports Network coming up at 3. But we got quick hits coming up, and an Ohio State question turns into a potential problem.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
On 92.3 The Fan. I'm going to need your help on this one, buddy boy, because the Morning Boys had Kings of the North host Doug Lemarice on this morning to talk about the college football playoffs when Ken Carmen volleyed this shot my way.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that a Rice offensive lineman is good enough to play for Ohio State? Where did Mike Bloomgren come from? Oh, that's right. Okay. Champions pose, baby. Champions pose.
The argument,
play
Doug.
It for the afternoon show. Play it for one of the former hosts of the Sons of the Shoe. Play it for them.
I'm old enough to remember 2 weeks ago when Ken Carmen proclaimed he wasn't going to punch down at us anymore. Man, anyways, explain this shot to me, please.
No, I can't. Also, wasn't Ohio State's offensive line, like, not good?
Yeah. That's a really good point. Is it because I said yesterday...
Wouldn't that mean that the Rice to Ohio State thing couldn't work, so why would the Rice to the NFL thing work?
That's a good point. Is it because I didn't say Mike Bloomgren was the greatest hire since Bill Callahan?
They had some narrative this morning that we, like, just poo-pooed the whole entire thing all day long. I think we just kind of looked at it like we don't know Mike Bloomgren from Adam, and we're just... It just is what it is.
All right. Well, I mean, Ken does work for the Browns. You know, got to pay the bills.
Oh,
I get
come
it.
On. Be nice.
I know. I'm just saying, like.
Be nice.
By the way, we don't have to like every assistant they hire. Like, do you hear they got Swiggly McGurley on the quality control? Can you believe it?
I've always liked Swiggly, and you know that.
I mean, he comes from Upper Bratislava, and they put out the best quality control coaches. You know what? I'm gonna make you know, Ken, best O-line hire I've heard of this year in the NFL. Of 2025, Mike Bloomgren, Bloom Diddler as he's known, is
only
the best hire.
Only by you, the only one that calls him the Bloom
hire.
Diddler.
No, I'm serious about this. Guys, his first name's Mike. He's got an MBA.
Hold on. You can't rip Chets and people that are named Chets and then turn around and make it about the name.
Mike is a traditional name.
No, I know. I know. Never mind. You
I'm understanding exactly. Chet, I think you're underestimating how bad of a name Chet is. Apologies to all the Chets out there. In the NBA specifically. Sorry, Ken. I'll make sure to kiss the Browns' ass for you next week.
Omaha!
I have a new idea for the Browns. Let's stay with the Browns for a second. So Tom Telesco gets fired today. Why not Telesco as a consultant for the Browns?
Yeah!
Why not? Think about it. You said yeah that way as if it was sarcastic, but Telesco drafted Brock Bowers. He spent 1 year with the Raiders, right? Bowers himself is, that's worth the price of admission, the way that he's been. But while with the Chargers, he was also the guy that drafted Justin Herbert. And Telesco had 17 Pro Bowlers in his time with the Chargers. The man knows what he's doing around a draft. The Browns don't know what they're doing around a draft. We're big on bringing in these consultants. So let's go to the Browns.
He's better than Ryan Grigson, who, by the way, is now getting run as a potential GM candidate because of Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and the job he's done in Minnesota. So that's strike one. So he's better than Ryan Grigson. And it at least tell me he's doing something. Now, can you promise they'll listen to him?
No.
Because if Tom
he might
comes
give out
in,
really good ideas and would be the most proven person in that room, and they still might just ignore him and treat him like the trash can.
All right, guys, I think we got to take Mason Graham. We've traded down to six here. We've gotten the future first.
Although, listen, they Mike Hall was apparently drafted because Mike Vrabel loved him so much.
Man, we're going to get a lot of mileage out of that, aren't we?
I am.
I mean, I just mean like, but we're going to reference that a lot because in a way,
I will.
We're going to start weaponizing that against Andrew Berry at some point, right?
I mean, I think they want us to already start doing that in many ways, if we're being honest. But that showed a willingness to listen in their collaborative efforts.
All right.
Telesco to the Browns in a consulting role. Who says no?
I don't hate it. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. It's still better than Paul DePodesta making
I'd
any
say
draft.
He'd be the best football mind in that building the moment he enters that building.
A new name has entered the NFL coaching carousel. Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell is expected to interview in Chicago in New York. It's the first time in a while I can remember him actually getting interviews. I want to say there was like a peak like 3 years ago.
He was the name.
Where he was the name. Actually, this
for college
close,
stuff, though.
Probably closer to like 5 years ago, because remember that was the name that everybody hinted to with Dorsey. Will there be another raise for Matt Campbell? Or do you think he's really, truly interested in the NFL?
I don't think he's interested in the NFL, but I also don't know how long do you hang out at Iowa State for?
Yeah, I think okay, one way you
They just got waxed by Arizona State in their bowl game.
One way you could construe this is that Matt knows that he has hit a peak
Scattaboo
in Ames.
Still might be running.
So I kind of like that. Here's the thing, and I'm too close to this because he's a lot like Matt Rhule. Like, he's a program builder. Matt Rhule had coached in the NFL for one season as like an assistant O-line coach. I don't think Matt Campbell's ever coached in the NFL. And he's kind of a guy that's like, for him to succeed, you have to buy into his college culture.
Yeah.
And that's a big ask to then adapt that to the NFL. And I'm not saying he couldn't do it. I'm just saying that my big stay away continues to be if they don't have requisite NFL locker room experience, it's so much more of a risk than if somebody goes, does the Pete Carroll head coach twice in the NFL, then to USC, then back again.
Omaha!
Let's stay with the Bears in this hiring cycle. Manuel Acho on Fox Sports 1, and this is going to be a bigger conversation. Well, we're trying to figure out whether or not Caleb Williams should have a say in the coaching hire, and whether or not, like, for instance, if he likes someone like Campbell, he gets to say, that's my guy. Here's Emmanuel Acho.
He has to have a say. I don't even necessarily know that I want him to, but he has to. NFL organizations, their success, it comes down to the relationship between the head coach and the quarterback, period. Ask Sean Payton and Russell Wilson. Ask Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence. Ask Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. Mm. It all comes down to the relationship between the head coach and the quarterback. At minimum, there has to be a mutual level of respect there, if not some level of understanding and friendship. So if you hire a head coach that Caleb does not get along with, you're just going to sink the franchise for the next 2 to 3 years because Caleb will not get along with that head coach. I don't even know that I agree with what I'm saying, but I do know that that's the only way it can go shady. Yeah. He has to have a say because that relationship has to be strong.
I've heard better sales
that was
pitches
the
before.
That was the worst argument I've ever heard once he got to the heat.
By the way,
I don't even know if I believe what I'm saying, but here's
why
I'm saying
it. The premise isn't good. The premise isn't good. And then you go into, you have to qualify it yourself. It's probably DOA.
It's an interesting premise. Like, should he have a say in it? Now, I would say the only argument against him having a say or having a discussion with Caleb and saying, who do you like, is that if you come to Caleb and say, hey, who do you think we should pick? And then you ignore what Caleb wants, that might backfire on you.
I just think, like, in all reality, Caleb hasn't earned that. Like, there are quarterbacks, I think, in the NFL have earned the right to call their shot. Mahomes, absolutely. Josh Allen, absolutely. Caleb Williams has had one rocky season in Chicago where he showed a lot of potential but didn't really bring it home for the Bears. And by the way, the big knock on him is he might still be super immature. So, like, hey, immature guy, tell me what a leader looks like. I don't know that we're going to do that. That feels a little galaxy brain from Emmanuel Acho there.
Omaha!
All right, I got to bring this up. Ness and I had the rare couples night a weekend ago, and we decided to try a new restaurant in Sharon, which is in between Wadsworth in Medina. The food was great, by the way. The service was amazing. The atmosphere is awesome. But one issue, it was self-seating. And so it's more of a bar than it is a full, like, sit-down family restaurant.
Do you place your own order, too, or no?
No.
You just sit down wherever you want.
Yeah, but okay. But it was a nightmare.
Because I once ate at a Shula's at an airport in Florida where you had to go and like pick up your own food and everything. It was weird.
So what happened is because there wasn't a big waiting room or like an area for everybody was just like everybody was scouting for spots. So it was going to be whoever got to it first. It stressed me out to no end. I hated every second of it. Is self-seating enough at a restaurant enough to make you not want to go back there? Because I will be honest with you, it's the first thing I think about when I think of that awesome restaurant, not the awesome food, amazing service, or anything else.
When you go to like a fast food restaurant, do you never eat inside?
Well, yeah. Yeah, but
same thing, right? No?
Oh, no. No, because you have to order the food first. So you order the food first, so there's an order of operations.
Okay, so the difference here is that you're choosing your own server, basically. Is that the difference for you?
No, it's that there weren't a lot of spots. It was so packed that there was like one spot, and literally, so Ness and I had been there. Everybody in this scenario knows that we had been there first, and we were walking around, a couple jumped the line.
Well, they knew you were going to take a good spot.
Yeah, well, because it was our spot. It's not about who gets there first. There is an order of operations. We're in a civilization, right?
Well, hold on now. I need to flesh this out.
Just because you're closer to it?
And I'm sorry, I'm not understanding it 100%.
This is duck, duck, goose?
Yeah, I think so.
Because they're closer and maybe faster?
Yeah, like you don't get to do a scouting operation and then like they have to hold off and wait for you to choose whichever one you want.
No, there was one spot. And they jumped the line. There's only one spot. It was loaded.
Why didn't you beeline to the spot?
I'm 350 pounds. Who do you think I am?
Did they go around you to get to the spot?
No, but they clearly, there was eye contact, and they went for it.
I mean, it's clearly rude on their behalf. I'm not gonna try to dress it up any other. It's clearly rude on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
You guys should have beelined right for it, though.
No, we started to, and they got there quicker. It was a whole thing. I'm still...
Well, what'd you say?
Well, I'm going to say, get the hell out of my seat. That's a little blacktop bully
for
me.
You established yourself. You're 300 pounds.
You can
easily go up to
him. I'm not a public menace.
Listen, I'm the known...
Get lost, pipsqueak.
I'm the known non-confrontational person on the show. So like, I'm not gonna... But even in that scenario, I might be like, hey, you clearly saw us come in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna sit there and wait until another seat opens up.
So you're saying I should have just been like... hey, I'm sorry.
If it was that
established,
if it was that established that like clearly I was first in the door, and there's an order of operations here, and there's only one seat, and I, for whatever reason I wasn't quick enough, but you tried to hop in there, they got to know better.
I think Vanessa, if I had gone up to that person and said, "Hey guys, we were here first, and I'm going to need you to hit the bricks," I think Vanessa would have left. And maybe left me in general.
Oh yeah, we married two different people. My wife would be the one actually going up to the table This is not how this works.
I basically married you on that front. I should say on that front.
Omaha.
All right, Micah Parsons has a podcast, says a lot of things, and I don't even know. He might do the Emmanuel Acho, which I don't even know if I believe what I'm saying right now. As he says this, here we go.
For the people that kept believing, because we're not done yet. We are not done yet, and I hope that y'all don't think we're done yet. It's going to be an amazing, amazing, amazing thing to see next year when we're holding the trophy. Yes, it's big goals, but I'm telling y'all right now, it's holding the trophy. I'm saying my prayers out loud. I'm saying my goals out loud so y'all can hear them. You know, we're going to be holding a trophy up next year, point blank period.
Micah buying into the Cowboys in a quick turnaround. And by the way, I mean, it seems like Mike McCarthy is going to be back next year, which I'm shocked by. But that's what it's trended to, and that's what it looks like it's going to be.
I will tell you, this is not too far off Jameis Winston praying to be delivered by from pick sixes.
Oh, he's just trying to put it out into the existence?
Yeah. By the way, Micah, other guys also pray to win the Super Bowl. So I'm letting you know.
You think he's got a dream board at his house? I feel like Micah Parsons is the type with a dream board.
Is there
board.
A difference between a dream board and a vision board?
Same thing.
Okay. All right. Then
Both started by Oprah in the 90s.
No,
who are we
actually,
kidding?
So vision boards, dream boards, those take work and effort. This dude's
this is the podcast version of a dream board.
This dude thinks like I'm just gonna do everything else I did, but this year I'm gonna throw one out to the good Lord, and he thinks that's gonna like Mike. A lot of people pray to win a Super Bowl. I pray to win the lottery. The problem is I'm praying the same prayer that like 8 billion other people have. At some point, God's just got to make a decision and roll with it.
Well, yeah,
right?
The only logic behind any of that that I always disagree with is the idea that, like, then that clearly shows that God favors Micah Parsons over everyone else that prays for it, right?
Yes.
So, like, if you won the lottery, that would be, I mean, that would be, well, geez, God answered my prayer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I want.
I mean.
And not other people's prayer. Yeah.
I mean,
maybe that should be it. I should be like, God, I'd like to win the lottery.
Thank you for the blessings. No, this is how LeBron ends up with Chosen One tattooed on his back.
Can you also ignore everybody else's lottery request?
That's what it is.
Man,
you gotta
pray to cancel out
other people's prayers.
Yeah, now we're cooking with gas here.
It might be a one for one though. It might take you a while.
That's okay. If I just keep again, it's I'm a volume shooter when it comes to prayer. Bill Ryder tells us whether the Thunder win has made him reconsider his Cavs stance next on 92.3 The Fan.